If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, the Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
Ben, it is the Monday after. The Monday after Star Trek Discovery. I wish we had something to talk about, but because we are recording so far into the future, we will just allow our sister show to do the work for us, won't we?
Yeah, those guys over there on The Greatest Discovery, I feel like they're going to do a great job. I really believe in those two.
The Greatest Discovery, of course, a wholly owned subsidiary of Uxbridge Shimoda LLC. A show of and for people interested in the conversation about Star Trek Discovery, the new CBS show.
God, there's so much going on right now. We're coming to the end of Greatest Gen. Got new Star Trek coming out. New pod, new format. We're going to go to one a week with our show.
Yeah. New city for you? Moving to L.A.?
Yeah, I moved to L.A. Let me just look this up to make sure that I've got this right. I moved to L.A. a week from the day this episode is coming out, which is the day that the last episode of The Greatest Generation about Star Trek The Next Generation comes out.
You're going to have to trade in all those sweaters for flip-flops, man. That's what you're going to have to do.
I put out a question on Twitter today. I was like looking at my TV and I was like, do I really want to risk packing this up and shipping it across the country? And so I put it out on Twitter like, what's the deal? Do I buy a new TV when I get there or do I ship this one and keep the TV I've got? Like, more than anything, it seemed like it was a bunch of people that were like, come on, Ben, get yourself a nice TV.
That's encouraging.
Yeah. So I feel like I'm going to print out some of these tweets and show them to my wife and see if I can't convince her that this is a great plan.
Ben, if I recall correctly, you have quite a list going already for this LA move. Once you find a place to live, you are going to get a pebble ice machine, as I recall.
Yeah.
You are going to get a cat.
Uh-huh. And an ice cream maker.
Oh, an ice cream maker also.
Yeah.
Like a nice one, not like one of those Margaritaville like iced beverage machines, right?
No, what I want is not even the one where you put the bucket in the freezer for 2 days.
That's the kind that we have. We've got the KitchenAid kind.
Yeah.
I
want to get the kind that has its own cooling unit built in. The kind that is ridiculous for a private household to own.
You are basically my wife's nightmare because I am very much on your side. I like single-use kitchen items the 3 times per year that we are able to use them.
Yeah.
My wife is constantly encouraging me not to make those purchases. But it seems like you may have a more of an ally in that regard than I do.
I think that I have found a perfect way to exploit my wife's feelings of guilt about making me move to a city that I would not have chosen for myself.
Ben, if you ask anyone what the secret to a happy marriage is, it's the exploitation of your spouse's guilt.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, our rabbi said that to us when we met with him before our wedding.
That's perfect. This marriage has an extremely high dollar value attached to it.
Yeah, it was.
You can't just nuke the marriage from orbit.
Fucking A.
Rabbi Yutanovitz pulled us aside.
Rabbi, has anyone ever confused you for a family therapist? best of luck, Ben. We haven't talked about what recording schedule is going to be like, but do you have a, like, sort of a last helicopter off of the roof of your apartment for recording pod before you move? Like, do we know that at this point, or are we just going to run it right up until the end?
I think that my, you know, like, I've got, we're recording this a couple of weeks before that day, and...
Yeah, hard to forecast.
I think we'll probably get at least the first few DS9s recorded before I go. That's my hunch.
Yeah. Well, we'll just take it as it comes. This has sort of been that kind of production schedule.
Yeah.
it has been a hair on fire kind of month.
It really has.
It's not the tour's fault, is it? I don't think it's the tour's fault, and yet the tour was a big, big part of it. Like, I went from job to tour to job again, and that really fucked us.
I think that...
I need to get fewer jobs.
The other thing was, like, I was so focused on the tour that, like, I assumed that time wasn't passing back in the world.
Right. Yeah.
And so, like, I got back from the tour, and I was like, man, we don't have anything to prepare for. And then I was like, oh, shit, I have to move my entire life across country. We have to start another podcast. There's a lot on our plates right now.
Yeah. It's so interesting that we are starting two new shows basically simultaneously.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's the word. Interesting, like the episode we're going to review today, Ben. Interesting, like a writer's room that's taken lots and lots of mushrooms. It's season 7, episode 23, Emergence.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
Adam, this episode starts with Picard sort of like looking at his phone while Data's trying to practice Shakespeare. You know, that thing where you're like trying to be there for your buddy, but it's just so boring that you kind of get lost in, you know, seeing if you can't beat that one level of tower defense.
Data like looked at his costuming and masks and was like, could we do a little better than that for this performance? And they full on like Blair Witch him. In this holodeck performance, he's playing Prospero.
Yeah.
The Tempest. In a reference that is very self-referential, I feel like. They even talk around it, like one of Shakespeare's last plays, a kind of meditation on final acts, if you will. I feel like this is a show that's sort of describing itself in this moment.
It is. It's the kind of like the Cliff Notes version of self-introspection, though.
Much like Picard is looking at his own phone during... This is an episode where I found that fairly easy.
I feel like Data's costume looks amazing when the lights are low, but then a train comes around the bend and they get blasted and like a little overexposed, and then suddenly Data's costume looks like a Vegas lounge act circa 1974.
Yeah, it's sort of the same effect that happens when people walk off the holodeck in costume. Like, as soon as you hit the office lights, you just look like a fucking buffoon.
Yeah, not great. They're talking about Shakespeare and what Shakespeare was thinking about when he wrote The Tempest, and then this train comes, and...
It's a real Ghostbusters 2 in the sewer moment, isn't it?
Did you catch the number on the locomotive?
Sorry, I missed it.
Yeah, but in the sewer, it made sense that there would be a train down there, right?
I guess so. At least location contextual sense. And Data does not stand on the tracks and allow it to blow through him like the way Winston does.
Yeah. Data goes ahead and pushes Picard out of the way, and he himself jumps after. And Picard takes an abrasion on the face. The first of two face abrasions we'll get in this episode.
I was thinking the same thing. Like, is there an area on the holodeck door, much like a World War II fighter pilot, like where they're just like hash mark on the face?
Face mark?
Yeah.
Yeah. The safeties were off. They could have gotten squished by this train. And
what a way to go out.
Not great.
Federation's most valuable piece of materiel and captain of its flagship killed in a freak holodeck accident.
Yeah.
Cut to credits.
Riker sending the report off to Admiral Nechayev about that has got to be like, oh God, this looks bad.
How do you think Nechayev takes that? Like, it's sort of a good news, bad news thing.
Like, does Nechayev say, Will, like, does she toss Will the keys to the ship? Or is it like, get your ass back to Earth, major inquiry time?
She was super willing to install a captain of her own during the Native American repopulation project of a couple episodes ago.
Yeah. Like,
I think she has someone in mind. Why doesn't she just say she has someone in mind and who it is specifically? I think that would make for a fun bit of conflict if we know who this person is.
Yeah.
Like Jellicoe just waiting in the wings.
I don't like you.
What is Nechayev's relationship to Jellicoe?
Do you think they've fucked? Is that what you're implying? Or does he just whip out the Torian canapes or whatever?
Yeah, I mean, you look at Jellicoe, I think he's got time for canapes.
Yeah, well, he's running a four-shift rotation. He's got a lot of sleepy people on his ship.
That canape game is super tight.
Does that mean that if you're running a four-shift rotation, does that mean at any given moment, three-quarters of the ship's crew are not working?
If you're running a four-shift rotation, does that mean all of your shifts are 6 hours?
I guess it would. That's kind of sweet.
I mean, why wouldn't your crew want that?
They depict Jellicoe as being so uptight, but that's great. If you get off off work at 3:30 p.m., fuck it. Let's go drinking, guys.
Yeah, that sounds good to me. I don't know. I don't know why everyone was so butthurt about that.
I think it was like literally Riker was butthurt about having to like rejigger his iCal or whatever.
Yeah, maybe Riker was the only one with a problem with that. Maybe Riker was the antagonist the whole time in that episode. I'd like to watch that episode again through fresh eyes.
Yeah, now that we've come to this amazing revelation about what a chill dude Jellicoe actually was.
Jellicoe and DeSoto were like best buds at the academy. Like,
I mean,
roommates.
He had a catchphrase that was very close to Larry the Cable Guy. That's the kind of vibe he was going for, I think.
You know, DeSoto was listening to Jellicoe jerk it in the bottom bunk at the academy.
Yeah, DeSoto's got like an 8-shift rotation. He's like, guys, don't don't break a sweat. This is just Starfleet. There's no money.
Everyone works 4 hours with a 45-minute break right in the middle. That's how we run the hood. It's how we've always run the hood.
So we come back from title sequence and Picard and Data decide to shut down holodeck for a while they figure out what is going on.
That could be a really bad moment for anyone who's inside running their program. Like they only briefly mention it, but much like the last episode where Jason is beamed off of a climbing wall mid-climb, like,
yeah.
Depending on what you're mid-doing on the holodeck, that could be quite a shock.
You just smash cut to holodeck 2 and Riker falls a foot and a half from a prone position.
From a standing 69 position, he like falls on his head. I love the idea that Riker would be the upside down one in a standing 69.
Hey, man.
His taste is just Amazonian-sized women, like, ready to do snoo-snoo on him.
I don't believe this.
The spirit is willing, but the flesh is spongy and bruised.
Like, they send another another killed in the line of duty message to Nechayev about Riker.
Yeah, he broke his neck.
I think at that point, Nechayev might assume command herself. Like, that's the top three. The top three get killed on the Entrepreneur in one terrifying holodeck accident.
What would it be like to be the people that go into that holodeck and find Riker? Like, rigor mortis has set into the boner that was...
That's a face down in the casket if you're burying Riker. That's one torpedo that's filled with a single snake once you shoot it out into the universe for his funeral.
Of all the souls I've encountered in my travels, his was the most horny. So they shut down the holodecks. They get the captain patched up and... what are they, like, off to some adventure, and they suddenly go to warp, and the ship is, like, outside of their control at warp 7.3, and they're, like, up on the bridge, and they're like, Data turned the warp off, and he's like, I can't. So they radio down to LaForge. They've got, like, I love it when, like, the warp engine is really pumping away, you know?
Yeah, it's a very satisfying pump.
LaForge is like running around. He's like, I don't know what the fuck is going on. And if, I mean, we could turn it off, but it would mean like a full warp shutdown, which would, you know, it takes a while to get back from one of those.
More than a week.
Picard is pretty quick to say like, well, that's what we got to do then.
Yeah, we can't just be out here ready to ram the ship into something.
Yeah, they don't know where they're going.
I was going to say, like, almost as quickly as it starts, their jump to speed stops. And Picard's like, hey, Geordi, great job with that,
that was,
slamming of the brakes.
That was really quick. You really nailed it.
Geordi does not take the credit for this solution.
Well done, Mr. LaForge.
Wasn't me.
I love the camera work in this episode, especially in engineering, because it's like Geordi, like, pushing himself back from his computer. And he's like, I don't know what the fuck just happened. The camera, like... turns around his head so you can to reveal the warp core. It's great.
Yeah. I believe this is Cliff Bollet in his last TNG episode.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He is he's the director who directed the most TNG episodes.
Wow.
Mr. Cliff Bollet.
I mean, I thought that the directing in this was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
TBH. It stood out to me.
25 TNG director credits for him. He has wow. 7 in DS9 and 10 in Voyager. The guy's a titan.
Yeah.
And he looks like a great guy. You look at his file photo, like, he looks like he's in the Parrot Army or whatever the fucking people who like Jimmy Buffett call themselves.
He's wasting away in Margaritaville.
Yeah.
Oh,
he looks
man.
Like a guy who would enjoy a nice frozen beverage with you.
I, last weekend, as of this recording, went to the ash scattering of my uncle, who for 35 years was in recovery from alcoholism, and I yeah. walked out onto the beach where we were holding the ash scattering, and, like, people from his Quaker meeting had set up music to play while it was going down. And the song selection that they had picked was Margaritaville.
In accordance with what we think your dying wishes might well have been.
What?
I came very close to just going and like yanking the cable out of the amp from the fucking guy's piano. I was like, you guys didn't know him at all.
How sure are you that those were his wishes? That was the song that followed that shots, 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 shots song.
Hey, now that you're dead, your struggle with this chemical addiction is a fun joke. Yeah. Fortunately, they finished the song before my father came out, or I think it would have been pretty bad.
Yeah, no kidding. Come on, guys.
Not a good look.
Get together.
They're like, well, what the hell was that about? Our ship is out of control, and we're also having holodeck problems. And Geordi and Data come up with this kind of it's not a solution but a lead, which is that there's evidence in the ship sensor that there was a theta flux distortion building up around the ship that would have ripped the ship apart if it had built up anymore, and if they hadn't gone to warp right when they did,
we would have been blown to pieces.
And they say, Adam, our sensors don't scan for this thing. So it's amazing that we even have it in the sensor log. Is this a real thing that they have to... Like, if it can just, without warning, destroy the ship, wouldn't you want to be aware of it?
Is this what... This is so stupid. Like, if it's possible to scan for something that could destroy your ship at any moment, why don't they scan for it? It's like they choose not to.
It's like they got to 5 minutes before they would have finished the invention that would have scanned for theta flux distortions.
Yeah.
And then went on lunch break.
It's like the Enterprise was sitting on top of a jacuzzi jet when they weren't supposed to. And then they could have had their assholes ripped out of them. The idea of this is terrifying. And what's weird about how everyone plays this is, like, they don't play it as a, oh, well, we should really start scanning for this shit in the future. They don't really postulate that. They also don't talk about how great it is, like, that they came within a hair of dying and they survived. Like, there's no sort of, like, this is a thing that happens all the time on this show. Like, there's no recognition of the wonder of the circumstance.
Right.
Like, this seems worthy of a, whoa, that's great. Good little ship. And then, like, give the ship a little pat on the wall. Like,
yeah,
you sure got us out of that pickle.
Like, the next scene is Jada and Geordi, like, doing some Jeffrey tube crawls, and they're like, yeah, I wonder how that happened. Maybe the ship picked up on it and warped because of some safety system. Which is like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like,
if that's possible, then that changes everything.
Don't you think the operations officer and the chief engineer would be aware of a system such as that?
I mean, you could extrapolate that if the ship were capable of doing that, then why wouldn't it, like, fire on random shit that it saw was a threat? Why wouldn't it shoot a Damon Box probe in the last episode?
Yeah, like, I mean, like, it's one thing if I discover that I can put my iPhone in low power mode no matter what the battery level is because it's, like, buried in a menu somewhere. It's another thing for the chief engineer and the operations officer of a starship to be unaware of a system that can trigger warp speed because the ship is automatically trying to get them away from a threat.
Geordi's like a guy who bought in our world, he's like a guy who bought a camera but didn't read the instructions before taking it out on a shoot.
Yeah.
And is surprised to see that it records without hitting the record button. Like, he didn't read the manual on the ship, and so he can't confirm or deny the idea that the ship will just do this.
Yeah.
And that's the most troubling part.
So they find this Giga looped into all these ship systems in the Jeffries tube. It's kind of like six crazy straws all interacting with each other.
Yeah, it sure is.
Man, you know that website Think Geek that does all those licensed office toys?
Mm-hmm.
They should do a crazy straw based on the emergence thing.
That would be great.
I would fucking buy that shit.
It's a straw so large and complex that, like, it would drain an entire drink into it before you even got to taste any of it.
Only Riker can derive enough suction to pull liquid through it.
And even then, he's got to be upside down to do it.
Yeah, gotta be.
Maybe Riker just has hiccups all the time.
It is a guiding principle with Darth Vader's face. Now you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth. You don't deserve to wear that uniform.
So these things are all over the ship. They're like, they show like a diagram of the ship, and it looks like infested. And they're like, this is all concentrated on one of the holodecks. So let's go down there and see what's going on. Maybe we can like shut it down at the source. And they go down to the holodeck. Program is running. It's actually several programs. And so they go through the door and they are on a train.
Riker even has the throwaway line before they go in, like, this should be interesting. Like, I think he has an idea of what's going to be behind that door, and he has to be a little disappointed at what they see.
Yeah, several programs are running, so Riker's like, what are the odds it's not at least a couple of mine?
Like, it's two train cars 69ing each other. So they... the three walk through that door that goes in between train cars and arrive in some sort of, like, saloon car.
Yeah. This looks like a fancy way to travel, man.
Yeah, it's a very nice interior train car scene. And you've got, like, some disparate character work happening here. You've got a knight in a suit of armor. You've got sort of a Wyatt Earp-y type figure.
Yeah, you've got a rustic. You've got a flapper. Got a man in a gray flannel suit.
Yeah, you got all the great minor characters.
You've got all of the great, we have this costume on the Paramount lot.
Giant nude Amazonian woman.
Yeah,
like doing come hither finger to Riker.
She's there, of course. And David Huddleston, the conductor, comes in.
Please have your tickets ready.
One of the greats.
Yeah. Wearing Hudsucker. Walks in asking for everybody's tickets, and he's in a conductor uniform. And he kind of ignores the crew at first. And while he's ignoring them, Data is like, oh, here's the panel in the floor of the holodeck where I get at the power. I'm just going to open this up and turn everything off, and that'll be great. And like as he's doing that, it gets the conductor's attention, and he's like, hey, you guys are going to have to give me tickets, or I'm throwing you off this train.
The bums will always lose!
And into the fray leaps the conductor, who insists that these people are here to help. And it's like a real conflict between the conductor and the engineer. Engineer, played by another that guy in his own right, Thomas Copacci. He's been in a bunch of things.
This guy plays the catheter to cowboy from from the Last Week Tonight ads.
Yeah.
He's great.
And there's two things I know. I don't like pain when I cath. And the nuclear triad consists of land-based missiles, submarine launch missiles, and aerial bombers.
That's because I think we were talking about the fact that he has a little role in No Country for Old Men.
Yeah, the part with the boots.
How are those Larry's holding up?
Yeah. Oh, I love this guy.
Yeah.
Man, I didn't recognize him.
Yeah.
He really disappeared into that engineer part.
That fucking engineer part is great. He really kills it.
If you're an actor who plays parts like this, this has got to be one of the greats because it's one day of shooting.
Yeah,
it's a super toothsome scene for you as an actor, and then you get killed.
Yeah, he gets killed by like a mafioso.
The cowboy doesn't kill him? I thought the cowboy does.
No, it's the like, you know, oh, this guy's a friend of ours kind of guy.
Oh, right. Like the Godfather's Pizza spokesman or whatever.
Do it.
He's a real pizza place tough guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think you're thinking of the world's shittiest Kurt Russell character who doesn't wind up having any lines.
Yeah, that guy's ersatz Earp.
So they
I'm just going to touch every possible episode title there is as we go. I'm licking all of them.
Lick all
so
the cookies.
So they're mine.
Adam, I spent 30 minutes on the phone yelling at our bank before we got on, so I'm not going to be coming up with any good quips. I'm just going to sit here and drink my sorrows away.
You're doing great, Ben. What are you drinking, by the by?
I'm having some Sierra Nevada Pale Ales.
Look at you. Hey, do you feel a lot of booze pressure to empty bottles before the move and like make that part of your move easier? Because I know the last time my wife and I moved, we definitely felt the need, and we just moved across town to like have a party, get some stuff drank.
I have.
You feeling any of that?
I have an unfinishable amount of booze due to my off and on career as a cocktail influencer.
Beer is for breakfast around here. Drink or be gone.
Unfortunately, I'm going to be shipping a lot of bottles.
You know who else was a cocktail influencer? Bill Cosby. I'm sorry, Ben. I just think that's a great title.
The number of concern trolling tweets we're going to get about that.
Is concern troll the worst kind of troll to you? In some ways, I respect a straight-up troll more than a concern troll.
I don't think we get much trolls. We pretty much only get concern trolls.
Yeah. Yeah.
The crew, like, bounces off of this train because they don't have tickets. And, like, Data and Geordi head down to engineering with Riker and explain to him that the holodeck is running the show for now. And it's a great, like... It's a great Riker Eyes to Commercial. Like, one of the greatest. It's almost like sending Riker Eyes to Commercial off into the wild blue yonder.
It's like bottle Riker Eyes. Like, we're saying goodbye to all the hits this last season.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very true.
It might be my favorite. Like, I think it might be the best Riker Eyes to Commercial in the series. It's that good.
Is he semi-wall-eyed during? Because my favorite Riker Eyes to Commercial are also when the camera gets too close. So close that one eye goes in one direction and one eye goes in the other. For me, that's my flavor.
That's just something that I enjoy. Call me crazy.
It's like a medium shot, and and he just looks fucking floored the entire time.
I love the idea of giving him the gavel to Commercial because... He articulates so few concerns about this entire scene, and yet he probably is the character with the most concerns.
Yeah.
Like, he's the one in the background secretly, like, oh, God. They're finally going to know everything. My life will never be the same.
We come back, and we are in a McLaughlin group,
if
and Data has... come up with some visual aids to show what brain stems look like. And he is demonstrating that the gigas that are embedding themselves in systems all over the ship are configured in a neural network configuration. And so he's suggesting that they need to kind of like let this scene play out as they figure out, you know, what's going on. It seems like the ship may have developed some sort of intelligence. And while it's still, like, you know, a primitive intelligence, it's within their charter is allowing these things to go down.
They sort of gloss over the conflict that they've had many times on this show before about emergent life forms, which is the conflict between we should kill it because it poses a threat to our lives, and we should... instead lay back and study it.
It's weird because like they've definitely talked about this a bunch of times, but this scene kind of plays like whoever wrote the episode like read like a pamphlet about emergent properties in science and
yeah.
Wrote an entire episode about their flimsy ass understanding of it.
Did you notice that Worf was standing up during this meeting? Why is that? Like, they shoot all of the question and answer shots tight, like, in close-up, including Worf, but you can tell Worf is standing. Is there not a seat for Worf?
There is a wide shot that shows everybody assembled, and it is, it's weird. They're weirdly configured. Maybe Worf was like, do you think there's, like, a deleted first part of the scene where Worf like can't see over Riker, so he like just gets out of his chair?
I wonder if Worf is continuing to have kid problems and he's like showing up late for meetings. There's no seat left for him. This is an ongoing concern.
No, Adam. He promised not to let his personal life interfere with his duties.
I'm sure everything will be great then.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. My love is a fever, long in jail for that, which
longer nurses the disease. You'll have to go again. Troy decides to, like, lead another expedition into the holodeck, right?
Yeah, she's going to see, like, what happens when she talks to the characters and, you know, do this more as, like, a stranger in a strange land, visiting with the characters. Everything is... And that's going down in the holodeck has something to do with these objects that are, you know, appearing all over the ship. So she wants to talk to them and see if she can't get a sense of what they're after.
This is a plan that's different from the first plan, because in the first plan, Data was just going to bring a wrench to the train and start, like, busting shit up. In this way, Troy just wants to see if the program will articulate what it wants instead of just running roughshod over it and trying to, you know, effect a solution that way.
What they didn't do is replicate up some tickets for this one, they knew was going to be an issue. And so they go on and, like, there's, like, a puzzle that some of the characters are doing, and it looks exactly like one of the things that's plugged into the ship. But she's like, they're all like, what could this be? I've never seen anything like it. I guess Worf and Troy weren't the ones in the Jeffries tube, so maybe they haven't seen one. But, like, Geordi and Data saw it, and Data's there.
Shouldn't that have been something that they brought up during the meeting?
Yeah.
Like, even as just a one last thing, like, oh yeah, we also ran into this shape. May or may not be important later.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Well, they arrive at Keystone City, and they come up out of the subway. So apparently this train is a subway. It's the 7th Avenue line of the IRT, if anybody is paying attention. It's like...
Now, I haven't been there before, Ben. Is that where the Orient Express goes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It goes through the back lot fake Manhattan that they probably also use in the Seinfeld program.
Oh, yeah.
Here's interesting trivia. No new sets were needed for this episode. The train set was a reuse from Bram Stoker's Dracula, and the in Paramount's standing New York City street set was used for Keystone City.
There you go.
Yeah. So it is like ersatz Manhattan with no cars and no people. It's like the cheap version of doing this kind of thing. And so they find, like, a manhole cover, and Data's like, this is cool. I can access the power from here. Maybe I can disconnect these little jobbies from the ship without hurting them. Meanwhile, Troy and Worf run off after the mafioso, who they find shoving this gold brick into a, like, the last empty brick hole in a wall. And it, like, lights up. It's like a real MacGuffin situation. And
I haven't ever built a brick wall before, but is that how you do it? You leave bricks unbricked in the middle?
Yeah.
Now, when you're building a brick wall on a holodeck simulation, you don't necessarily have to build that wall the way you would in the real world. For me, I like to build a fantasy brick wall, leaving portions of the brick exposed, holes in the wall itself, and lines that are less than 90 degrees square.
OSHA regulations require hard hats in any bricklaying context, but for this job, we're not wearing them so that it can be extra dramatic when the ship starts shaking and a bunch of bricks fall on Counselor Troy, operating her face in exactly the same place as Captain Picard early in the episode.
Now, with any job site face abrasion, you're going to want to go to your nearest OSHA-approved first aid kit. You want to use hard, even pressure on the wound to stop the bleeding.
I had a job for like 9 months last year, and part of what I was asked to do was set up a little production studio, little mm-hmm. studio space in a Manhattan office, and I set it up, and like the building operations guy in our office came around and like noticed that I had put a fire extinguisher and first aid kit on the wall near the door. And he was like, how'd this get here? And I was like, I ordered it for the studio because you kind of want those things. And he was like, fucking super impressed.
I feel that way on like when I do event video production.
Yeah.
Like anytime Homebase has that stuff around, it automatically feels like it's a professional production. Like even though those are things that should be on every set.
Yeah.
Like seeing them out in the open, I mean, is an especially good feeling.
Yeah, it's the kind of operation I want to run, you know.
Yeah.
Well, anyways, there's a thing that looks like the puzzle piece or a bigger version of the thing Geordi and Data found in the Jeffries tube that is, like, taken form in the cargo bay.
Question is, what is it?
The ship is using, like, the transporter and the replicator. It's, like, tying systems in together to, like, make this thing happen. So Data is, like, trying to shut off the power and like, a taxi cab has tried to hit him a couple of times, so he's like he's doing a fun like Data feat of strength where he has a hand on the bumper of the car while he like flips a switch. And
it felt very Superman in Metropolis to me.
Totally,
you know?
Yeah. And he hits the switch, and like things really go to shit. Like the ship starts shaking, bricks fall on Troy, the device in engineering starts like giving them troubling readings on their tricorders. So they get word to Data to like cut it out with polarizing the power or whatever. And he stops and like the ship barely like doesn't fall apart.
Yeah. Crisis averted, I guess.
Just barely.
It feels almost medical at this point. Like the conflict, right? The stop doing what you're doing, and then the consequence is this other bad thing will stop happening too, right?
Yeah, they've definitely found a causal relationship with fucking with the object and the ship getting worse and worse. But like, it is scary, right? Like the ship is 100% out of their control, and they're like we don't want to fuck with these things, but we do want to be able to like not die.
Yeah, like we'd like to be able to breathe for longer than 2 hours, which is eventually like the point where they get. They're like, hey, studying it is cool and everything, but this thing is taking all of the systems and reorienting them into its mission of creating this thing.
Yeah, like it's trying to fly to a star that is full of Verdion particles. And if it can like suck Verdion particles out of the star, it will be able to like finish whatever project it is embarked on. And they fly to like the first one, and like it's not as many Verdion particles as is hoped, so the HUD is like, fuck, this is in Vertiform City. And they're like, well, we know like a dope shortcut on this Vertiform City shit. And so they're basically trying to convince the emergent intelligence to let them steer the ship toward a nebula where they know that they can make more Verdion particles. Like they can shoot modified torpedoes into this nebula and it'll generate as many Verdion particles as these crazy straws need to make their uber crazy straw. Because if they go to where the aliens want to go, they're gonna run out of air.
I am the cutest of all.
So they go back in and they've remembered to replicate tickets this time, and they tell the Big Lebowski, like, listen, dude, we got a great plan for how to get to Vertiform City. It's a shortcut, and you just gotta let us up to that car at the front of the train. It winds up with Data like turning wheels and cranking cranks to steer the Enterprise to this nebula that they found.
Yeah, that those gears and levers correspond to ship's functions is a really fun moment, I thought.
And that he would,
like, soon as he pulls the speed brake, like the ship drops out of warp.
Yeah, and that he would know like which ones to pull and like you know,
yeah,
where to leave them and stuff.
I'm surprised Troy didn't know how all those gears work, given her knowledge of post-colonial culture and technology.
But Hudsucker is very, very pleased.
Are you surprised at my tears, sir?
As is Gangster Boy.
Do it.
And they, like, I guess, like, the ship, like, sucks in all the Verdion particles it needs. Picard and the Doctor and Will and Geordi head down to the cargo bay to check out the giant crazy straw on the floor of the cargo bay. And it does a classic TNG, like, float up and then, like, emerge from the ship without, you know, it, like, it can just go right through walls, man. And it floats away.
This is a thing that's happened half a dozen times on this show.
I know.
Little sparkly guy goes through the wall and leaves, never to be seen again.
It's like an obscure clause in some contract that every season of the series has to have a point of light emerging from the ship and floating away in space.
They always never see it again, too.
Yeah, you never get any follow-up on these guys. Damon Bach, sure, we'll get some follow-up on him, but...
Yeah, ridiculous.
And then they have a big party on the train.
Yeah, I mean, when you save the day, I suppose you want to stay around on your weird holodeck program and have some martinis, right?
Got to.
Mission accomplished.
The button on the episode is Data coming in and going like, well, we let that thing, like, self-derive and then float away, but we have no idea if it's like a good creature or an evil creature. And Picard is like, well, you know, like it didn't just self form, it like it formed itself out of our own ship, so it's had access to all of our logs and all of our experiences are its experiences, and hopefully if we've lived honorably, it will have like a positive future.
You know what other beings had access to all of his memories and feelings are the Borgs. Didn't change their minds about anything W/R/T genocide. Or the Nubbin Bugs. The Nubbin Bugs knew everything about the Federation, and they're still evil and out there. Where do you get off, Picard?
I wish, as he was talking about, like, all of our hopes and dreams, if the camera had panned over to reveal that Riker was sitting there on his couch, just, like, finger in collar, like, eee. Ooh. It seemed especially interested in the holodeck. Oh, no.
Now it's just free to roam the galaxy looking for things to fuck. Did you like this episode, Ben?
I do like this episode. Like, I think that it stubs its toe on a lot of dumbness at the beginning, but it's kind of like the best case scenario with fun in the holodeck, I think.
Mm.
Where like the characters tend to be like pretty fun. And like they don't get caught up in it being a costume drama in an annoying way.
Yeah, boy, it walks right up to that line of ham and cheese and just doesn't succeed in quite jumping completely over it the way it so often does in holodeck eps.
Yeah, so in that way, I think it's like it's pretty fun. And there's some really fun camera work in this, like... There's a shot in engineering at one point that is like Geordi in Shimoda corner, like, and it's through that window, but from the second level of engineering. So like the warp core is like soft focus in the foreground, mm-hmm. and Geordi is like deep in the background. And it's like one of the most layered shots. And it's like a shot we've never gotten. And it's so cool. It's so cool to see this set from an angle we've never seen it from at like three episodes from the end of the series.
That there are still new ways to shoot this set, I think, is a real treat sometimes to see. Yeah. I like the episode too, but it's one of those eps that I hardly remembered before watching it this time. And I don't know if I would go and seek out and watch again. Like, You know, sometimes when I want to watch TNG, I'll like go find a favorite episode or an episode that I remember as being interesting. But like, this would never fall into either category. Like, I don't know that I would go seek it out if it wasn't in the order that I needed to watch this show. So that's my review, I guess.
Well, Adam, do you think we should go check out if we have any Priority One messages?
Yeah, let's do that.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
But the interest alone could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first Priority One message is from Robert Jason Harris. Alleged bad hygienist, astrologer to John Ersprung Esquire, and all-around badass. It is for Andrew Wade Nadolski, Olympic gold medalist in polar region trolling and genital wart size.
Oh, jeez.
God, you know, like, they're using first, middle, and last name like they're both serial killers. Message goes like this. When you left for pole, I shed a single tear, unaware you'd make it my childhood Halloween costume. Angry condom head fat Picard. My second most embarrassing TNG-related memory. Can't wait for you to get back so we can porch beer and send each other ASCII middle fingers over stable internet. Go fuck yourself with the dwindling Ross ice shelf. Megan says hi. Did I read that right? That sounded difficult at times. You left for pole.
I think Andrew Nadolski actually wrote us about how he's at the South Pole.
He's grilled cheese guy, right?
I think he had us give his friends in Chicago a shout out. Is that the same guy?
I remember that too. That's got to be the same guy.
Or do we have more than one listener in the polar region, Adam? Are we DPing the polar region?
I think you definitely know when a single viewer is in the polar region. When two viewers are in the polar region, that can be an uncomfortable moment.
Yeah, your eyes start to cross and you just sort of like lose track on reality.
You go eyes crossed to commercial.
Adam, our second Priority One message here is from Jonathan, and it's for Aaron. It goes like this. You kick like a Red Bull, stun and kill with your smile. All are weak to your charm. Resistance is futile. Also, you're a wicked awesome badass. Just saying.
Hey, that's nice.
That is a sweet message.
That's a nice message after a potentially not nice message. I like it when it works out that way.
Yeah. I wonder if Jonathan and Aaron are, like, good friends or lovers.
Impossible to know.
Impossible.
We can only speculate.
Yeah.
We can only speculate and come to the conclusion that yes. Yes, they are. Well, if you have a message for a friend, enemy, or lover of the personal nature, you can have us read that message live on the air by going to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Personal messages are $100. And commercial messages, which seek to commercialize your product or project, are $200. They're a great way to support the ongoing production of this program. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Oh, boy. I had a big-time drunk Shimoda in this one, Adam. They get into that train car the second time, and they really want to work on depolarizing the power or whatever. And Data says to Worf and Troy, like, and specifically, he says to Worf, distract these holodeck characters while I do this, because they got pretty lit the last time. What does Worf do? Sits down and gets involved in a puzzle.
Worf is going to be such a great old when he gets there. Hey, you guys puzzling? I love how they treat him too. Like Worf asks something stupid, like, "So what is it?" And they're like, "It's a puzzle, dumbass."
I know. I'm into puzzles. I'm asking what the picture is.
Ben, it occurs to me that as we wrap up the Greatest Generation, Next Generation version, all of these Shimodas toward the end really have implications in terms of Season 7, Master Shimoda, and series-wide Shimoda. So it is with some knowledge of how the scoring is going that I'm also going to give my Shimoda to Worf.
I feel like Worf has
gotten a lot of these throughout Season 7 and also the series. But I'm going to give it to him for a different moment. They board the train, and I think it's the time when Worf and Troy and Data are on board that the conductor's like, "We could use some help in the locomotive." And Data and Troy are like, "Well, Worf, you're the biggest and strappingest of all of us. Why don't you go shovel some fucking coal?" And the look on Worf's face is one of recognition and humiliation. He recognizes that he's the one most suited to shoveling coal. There's also some amount of humiliation to the idea that this is what best serves the mission.
Yeah.
Him doing manual labor in the locomotive and the look on his face, that fucking look. He's so crushed. He sort of eye rolls. He's in profile, so you don't see the eye roll, but it's definitely there. So yeah, Worf, double Shimoda, different times.
Rock and roll, Worf.
In an episode that may put him up over the top. I don't know. We'll just have to see what the scoring is at the end of the season.
I can only wait till Colin Dinsmore finishes his tabulations.
Are we doing Shimodas for Deep Space Nine and Discovery? I feel like Shimoda is something that we should bring forward. Shimoda is in the DNA of our show.
Yeah, we can't not do Shimodas.
Yeah. How are we supposed to know who's having the most fun or acting the weirdest?
I would say that the character Jim Shimoda is timeless.
Agreed.
Is beloved.
Cosign.
And should not be abandoned like something that was TNG only.
Concur.
Darmok Angelad at Tanagra.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness. And it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe? Another candle? Slippers? A sweater? Flowers? We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can. And it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use. And I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. Folks I've given an Aura frame to love it, and I love it too, because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures, you're giving them new pictures every time you send one to it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVS at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean, with Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leaders in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening, and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is Season 7, Episode 24, Preemptive Strike. Ro Laren. Is forced to choose between her loyalty to Picard and her hatred toward Cardassia when she accepts an assignment to infiltrate the Mequis.
I'm so glad we're going to bring that drop back.
Yeah. That'll be fun.
Has Ro been in anything this season?
This, man, I don't know. This may be her.
It feels like it's been a long time.
Her Season 7 debut?
I love that they give her a goodbye. This is one of the great episodes in Season 7, I think. Is this the penultimate episode? Is this the episode before All Good Things?
It is.
Wow. I can't believe it. We're really coming to the end, man.
One time in college was working on a screenplay project, and I presented a version of the screenplay in class, and like we would read them aloud. You'd like cast mm-hmm. all the characters, and before I got my like feedback from the professor in the class, I said, "I'm hoping this is the penultimate draft. I'll do of this screenplay." And my professor said, "What do you mean by that?" And I said, "Well, you know, like I'll take your feedback now and I'll do one more draft and then hopefully that'll be it." And he said, "Good answer." And it was very clear in saying "good answer" that he didn't think I knew what penultimate meant.
Oh boy.
Think about that moment a lot.
He was attempting to get you ensnared in a penultimate trap.
He really wanted to embarrass me in front of the class.
What a jerk.
Yeah. I loved that professor, though. He was so good.
He was firm but fair.
He was firm but fair, and I knew he hated me, but I loved his class.
I love the idea that an educator could hate you, and your personal feelings on them would be, "That's fair."
Yeah.
I could see how you could hate me.
I know exactly why this doesn't work for you, but I appreciate all the things that you are teaching me.
Is that the way you absorbed breakups too? Like, girl breaks up with you. Yeah, that checks out.
100%, Adam. Every time I've ever been told by a woman that she's not interested in seeing me anymore, it's been like, yeah, this math problem finally has the answer it was looking for.
It's why I so rarely fight those moments at the time, because the reasoning is so sound.
Yeah, yeah. You're not wrong.
Setting aside the idea that for all the kiddos out there struggling through relationships, you should never be in a position to convince who you're with that they should be with you.
Like, oh.
But the idea of at the moment of breakup, there being any moment where you could be like, "But that's not true. That's not me. I can be better." You never want to be that guy. You are who you are. And every single time I've been broken up with, that has been my reaction. Like, yeah, you got me. You found me out. What? How did you describe that teacher as viewing you?
I would say that, he was a professor that had kind of three tiers in the class. There were like, you know, like in the sections where it was like only 20 of us, there were three or four kids that were people that he obviously thought had talent and and admired their writing. And then there were like a big group of kids in the middle where it was just kind of like, okay, you're in this class, you're going to like learn the shit I say to you, but I don't really care about you. And then there was me and like maybe five or six other kids that it was just like, you are beyond help. You are idiots. And I can't believe I have to fucking waste my time on you.
I'm going to humiliate you.
Yeah.
Like, was anyone in the top tier not a girl that he wanted to fuck?
Yeah, no, like there were like, it was a screenwriting class in like, I don't know, sophomore year of college. And there were like, there were kids writing scripts in that class that I was like, holy shit, this is a fucking great script. I would totally watch this movie. You know, like I hadn't gotten there yet. And I still haven't gotten there, you know? Like, I've never written a script that I would want to see a movie of.
When I was I'm almost positive this was my freshman year in college, I took a short story writing class.
Mm-hmm.
And this was like, you remember when you were signing up for classes in freshman year and you were like, I cannot believe I get to select a class where I write short stories. This is so fucking great.
Yeah.
I was so pumped for it. And I get in there and the teacher has a fucking scarf and it's 90 degrees out. It's like that sort of class. Like it's peak English class. And everyone in the class is super serious and like their short stories are like, they were meant to be published in something that wasn't McSweeney's. And I wrote a short story that was basically a short action movie. Like, I basically wrote Taken.
Yeah.
As a short story.
Sure.
And we all had to share our stories in class. Like, we all had to read our own stories in front of everyone.
I have a very particular set of skills that makes me a nightmare for college professors like you.
I'm like eighth on the day in reading. And I've heard eight different versions of like, of stories of lost loves and death of parents and like adulterous adults, and we finally get to me, and like three paragraphs in, a guy has popped the emergency exit on an aircraft while it's in the air and is like, and has turned his seat into an ersatz parachute as he's like hurtling towards the ground. The looks on people's faces in this class as I read that stupid fucking story. Here's the, you want to hear the damnedest, the damningest of fate praise that you could possibly hear after that was the bescarfed professor holding the four beats after I finished my story and going, well, short stories can be about a lot of things, class. They certainly can teach. Pretty brutal.
Good times.
Well, Ben, one of the best times of any podcast is when we express our gratitude for the people who got us here. Most notably, one Dark Materia, who's designed and created our theme and interstitial music, and Adam Ragusea, who's made so much of our other music that we've come to enjoy.
Indeed. Come follow us on Twitter. It's at Cut for Time for Adam and at Benjamin R, AHR for me. And we use the hashtag GreatestGen for all of the jokes on there. And it is a real fun hang on Twitter. And no less on Facebook and Reddit. We've got a great Facebook group, a great Reddit sub, like our Facebook page. What else? Oh, great Wikia that has forensic discursiveness on our various inside running jokes. And with that, we will be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and an episode of The Greatest Generation that might turn on Max Fun at the last moment and become a member of Feral Audio.
Hey, any network that has Doughboys on it is a great network in my mind.
Yeah, it's probably pretty good. Make it so. Make it so. Make it so. Oh, and there's a great Wikia that has like forensic discursion, forensic discursiveness on our various inside running jokes.
Stuck the landing.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.